Welcome to the History of the Caribbean audiobook. If you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss a story. Today, we're honored to bring you Africa Unite, the Pan-Africanist Legacy of Rastafari. Get ready to immerse yourself in a powerful narrative that goes beyond music into legacy, resistance, and roots. Because here, our mission is simple: to keep our culture alive, one story at a time. They tried to silence the movement. They burned its homes. They jailed its prophets. They mocked its chants. But the lion roared on. By the late 1970s and 1980s, Rastafari was no longer confined to the hills and ghettos. It had spread beyond coral walls and zinc fences, into universities, into government chambers, and even into the very heart of the systems that once sought to destroy it. Yet the path was not linear. It was carved through blood, through chains, through the pounding of drums behind prison bars. In the streets, Rasta remained a voice of protest. When poverty suffocated Kingston's poor, when gunmen turned communities into battlegrounds, it was often the Rasta who stood in the fire with nothing but words, levity, and ancestral pride. Their chants were not just spiritual, they were political. They stood up for landless farmers, for hungry children, for dignity in a system built to deny it. In the prisons, Rasta brethren transformed concrete cells into schools of liberation. Behind bars, they studied scripture, debated doctrine, and spread their message among inmates. Dreadlocks were shaved. Ganja was forbidden. But even in solitary confinement, the fire burned. The prison became another Zion, under siege but unbroken. And slowly, the tide turned. As reggae music soared and the international gaze turned to Jamaica, politicians who once vilified the Rastas now courted their votes. Michael Manley, Jamaica's prime minister in the 1970s, even embraced the image of Haile Selassie and carried a rod of correction during rallies. The same parliament that had once demonized the dreadlocked became the stage for dreadlocked politicians, activists, and intellectuals. Rasta was now speaking in the language of legislation. Still, it wasn't without contradiction. The streets didn't always trust the suits. Many Rastas warned against co-optation. Babylon had a way of wearing new clothes, they said. And yet progress was visible. Rasta voices influencing education, ganja decriminalization discussions, cultural policy, and social reform. The lion was no longer just roaring from the hills, it was roaring from the Senate. But the soul of Rastafari remained rooted in the people, in the barefoot youth reasoning in market lanes, in the elder chanting with cracked voice on a sunrise veranda, in the street vendor blessing his goods in the name of the Most High, in the dreadlocked sister leading workshops on repatriation and culture in inner city schools. Rasta was not a monolith, it was a living body. Nyabingi, Bobo Ashanti, 12 tribes, independent mystics, street prophets, scholar priests, musicians, farmers, organizers, each one a different voice, but all roaring the same truth, Jah lives. And that roar echoed far beyond Jamaica. In Africa, in Europe, in South America, and on the streets of Harlem and Brixton, the lion's voice carried. Rasta became a flag for the oppressed, a compass for the lost, and a warning to the wicked. Because when the lion roars, it doesn't ask permission. It reminds the world that even in a system designed to silence him, the Rastaman will still speak.